Yeah, I mean, it definitely can be very challenging. I think you have to make a choice. You can either let the bad things defeat you, or you can persevere. And I like from my own personal experience, something good always follows something bad. You just have to be open to the possibilities. I mean, the year that Paramount Prince was born, at that time, my best mare died after foaling. And it's obviously it's terrible. And I'm sure most of us in the business experience it at some point or another. But you just kind of have to ask yourself, do you want to continue? Because this is going to continue to happen, right? It's like it's life. With life, there's death. And here I am, a few years later, and I'm rewarded with the most spectacular success of my life. And yeah, it's just, you've got to persevere.
There is a depth and a breadth to our lives that largely goes unexplored. As an equestrian life mindset coach and host of this podcast, I am here to lead you on that exploration. Deep conversations covering topics in and out of the show ring with industry leaders and unsung heroes alike, sharing their stories and what makes their journey unique, but relatable at the same time. We all have stories to share and lessons to trade, something we've learned from a horse or from each other. So relax and be ready to listen with more than just your ears. I'm Tracy Mitchell. Welcome to Hitting Your Stride. Take it from Erica Rusnak and learn to love the small things about horses. Erica had been loving the small things about horses since she was a girl, and that helped guide her to a career as one of Canada's new generation of horse breeders. Her story is uniquely hers, a compass that once pointed her to the water with a promising rowing career turned her back to the barn where she was meant to be. Along the way, Erica has used a lot of the same mental and physical preparation techniques she learned in rowing as she followed her passion for horses. And while she sometimes questions what if, her recent success in breeding a Queen's Plate champion has given her a view from the mountaintop and left little doubt in her mind that she made the right choice. It hasn't been all smooth sailing as she works at Hill and Dale Canada Thoroughbred Breeding Farm, as the lessons that leave a lasting impression are both good and bad. Erica admits that it can be a challenging life and it will always be full of choices to be made. But she takes comfort in knowing that every time something bad happens, something good is not far behind. I had a blast talking with Erica for this episode, and I'm sure you're going to get just as much from this as I did. Get ready to hit those highs with Erica Rusnak as she takes us on one heck of a ride. Enjoy. All right. Welcome back to Hitting Your Stride, everyone. And today I have with me Erica Rusnak. Thank you for joining me today.
Thank you for having me.
Yes, this has been a long time coming, but it's definitely worth it. All right, Erica, what was it about those trips to your aunt's farm and disappearing into the barn and the fields that opened up a connection with horses for you?
Well, I think horses are beautiful animals, and I always found them captivating. I mean, they're so big. Their size is even more impressive when you're young and little. I think they really leave an impression on you. They're so inquisitive and they're very kind. I also love the peace and quiet that just being present with them brought, like even as a child, the smells of the barn and the sounds of horses chewing on hay and snorting. I love all those things just as much today, actually.
Well, that's a good thing. Yes, and I know too that you love a camera. You love to take pictures. Do you think there's like maybe that artistic side of you when you see a horse and its natural beauty or the surrounding and the natural environment that they're in? Is that part of the connection, do you think?
I think so. I mean, I love taking photos of just about everything, but horses especially. I mean, I spend so much time with them during the day, and being able to capture the special things that they do throughout the day. It's pretty special. I mean, they're so athletic. They perform a lot of incredible feats just playing around in their paddocks. So I love doing that.
All right. So how did rowing train you mentally in ways that got you prepared for life as a horse breeder?
Rowing. Rowing required a lot of dedication, physically as well as mentally. You have to get up so early in the morning every day and you're always having to push yourself. I know when I was doing competitions, it was like a battle of my own mind and body, right? Like, how hard can I push myself and how long can I maintain the pain until the finish line? And I think breeding horses is, it's not physically painful, but raising them and working with them certainly can be. They're kind of rough on you sometimes, right?
Yeah.
And I think to breed horses, you have to have mental fortitude. I mean, it can be very challenging and you have to be able to persevere. So yeah, I think success is earned, not given.
Yeah, exactly. And you know, the self-discipline, like you said, I mean, if you're not one that can make yourself get up as early as the crack of dawn that needs to be done, then you're probably not going to be successful at the, 24/7 life of horses.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, there's days where you'd really rather sleep in for sure, but they depend on us. So you got to do it.
Exactly. So how difficult a decision was it for you to leave rowing behind and follow your passion for horses, especially if your coach had Olympic aspirations for you?
You know, it's not as difficult as you might think. Horses just pulled me. I mean, I found I had a much stronger passion for horses in the end than I did for rowing. So yeah, I mean, I look back now and I do question sometimes, like, what if? Mm-hmm. But I'm very happy with the choices that I made.
Do you ever find yourself getting on the water again with anything like that? I don't know.
Oh, I'd love to.
Yeah,
it's just not close. I'm probably about an hour either way. There's a rowing club north of me in Barrie, and there's one in Toronto. It's just too far, I think, to make it practical, like to train and do that in the morning and do the farm. I couldn't do it. If there was one closer, 100%, I would love to get into rowing again.
That's always been a sport that's definitely caught my attention too. But yes, my goodness, it takes so much. What's the dragon boat racing? Is that something, like, I know it's not officially rowing and it might be, like sacrilege asking you, but would something like that be kind of something fun that you would want to do in your spare time?
I think it'd be interesting to try. I mean, it's different than rowing for sure, but I think there's like a community aspect with dragon boat racing. I mean, there's several people in a boat together, whereas the type of rowing I did, it was just me in a single boat alone on the water. So I think it'd be fun. The camaraderie with teammates, I think, would be a fun experience.
Yeah. Yeah. So I guess, you're drawn to things that provide for you solitude in a way, right?
Yeah.
Getting up early and being with the horses and then being in a single scull on your own in the water.
Yeah, that's, I never really considered that, but you're absolutely right.
Oh my goodness. All right. So talk about your work ethic and where it comes from. Is that something you look for in people that you surround yourself with professionally?
I would say, so my parents are both hard workers. My brother is a hard worker as well. And my parents were always pretty supportive and generous with my brother and I, but we were encouraged to, take pride in achieving our own goals. So whether that was like working to buy something I wanted or winning a competition, I do appreciate good work ethic in other people as well. As far as like hiring people, I certainly look for someone that has the ability to work hard, that chooses to work hard and is like a team player. And yeah, I mean, my day-to-day tasks at the farm, I work on my own. I take pride in being self-sufficient. And there's an expression that if you want something done right, you do it yourself. And I usually do.
Oh, us horse women, I think that's probably the mantra of most of us.
Yeah. My mom says I like eigenwees all the time. It's like Dutch for stubborn. So yeah.
So how big is your farm? How many horses do you have and how many staff are you managing?
So we actually have two farms. We have our main operation is in King City, and that's where all of our foals are born. And that is where the bulk of the staff are. We have at any given time about four staff members.
Okay.
And we'll have someone like during the foaling season, of course, we have someone who's watching them all evening. And during the day, we'll have two to three people watching them like throughout the day until the night watch starts. And then the farm that I'm at, it's smaller scale. It's about 16 horses, 16 stalls. So that could be, you know, mares and foals, which of course is more work. But right now I have yearlings and a couple of mares. Some of the mares are pregnant and will eventually be going to our main farm for foaling. And a couple of the mares are here, under lights to be bred this season. And the rest are, yearlings. And it's like a cycle.
Yeah.
So come spring, the bulk of the yearlings will go to our main farm for prepping for sales. And at that point, I will start getting mares and foals, and it starts all over again.
Wow.
So it's kind of fun.
Yeah. What was I going to say? So with your staff, because you are so emotionally and everything invested in this, do you find it hard or are you pretty blessed in the staff that you have? Because I'd think too, you would want someone to be as invested in this as you are. Is that hard to come across?
I think it is. Yes. I think it can be very challenging. I would say we are blessed because I actually am in my 20th year, at Hillandale.
Wow.
And although I do work at this farm alone, I've had a woman who will give me time off, when I need a day. And I've had her working here for about 4 years and she's incredible. She's, very gifted horsewoman herself. So I'm very lucky. Our main farm, Tova, is our night watch and she's amazing. And she's been doing this for, I guess, the last 12 years, I believe she's been working here. So,
wow.
Yeah. I mean, and Michelle's been working at the farm almost as long as I have. So we're very fortunate. It's like a family. We know each other really well and we're all very invested. Absolutely.
Wow, that's amazing. And it is like, think too, when you talked about this being a cycle and enjoying it, it's a whole different level of getting to know these horses and bringing them along and knowing them from day one and then moving them onto the next career part and then hopefully seeing them in the racetrack.
Absolutely. Yeah. Yeah. It's pretty great.
Wow. Okay, so since you got your official start at 18 as a professional horsewoman, what lessons have left the biggest impact on you? And how have you found a way to pass that knowledge on to others you've encountered?
I would say failures and successes have probably been my biggest teachers and most impactful. Each horse that I've owned and worked with has had a lesson for me, as long as I'm listening. And I think, like with anything in life, practice makes progress. So the more you, experience and the more you do, the better you grow. And as far as your last question, I don't know that I've imparted wisdom on anyone around me. If anything, I've just been open to, people about my own experiences and willing to listen to others.
Well, isn't that, that in itself is huge. I don't know if anyone necessarily goes around on a day-to-day basis and saying, okay, I'm going to impart knowledge and pass it on. But in the day-to-day experiences that you have, I'm positive with the 20 years of experience, people got to be listening and paying attention to you.
Well, I guess.
What, when you said, I loved what you said about, sorry, the failures and the successes.
Oh, yeah.
Can you touch on maybe one of each, or like even the failure? Because I'm big on that. There's no such thing as a failure. It's just a lesson in a different package, and you take it and you move forward. Is there one you can share?
Yeah, I'm trying to, there's probably so, there's countless failures, right? I mean, I look at even things like selling a horse really poorly in a way as a failure. I'm probably pretty hard on myself. I mean, some things for sure are out of my control. Silly decisions, but keeping horses that maybe I shouldn't have kept. Right. I mean, it's supposed to be a business, and I know sometimes I lead more by my heart than my head, and that's gotten me into trouble. So in a way, those are failures, but everything's worked out. I've certainly learned from a lot of the decisions that I've made, and I mean, success is like the biggest success of my life was this past year, of course. So, what have I learned from that? I've learned I want more. Yeah, I mean that was just so incredible. I would love to experience something like that again for sure.
Wow,
So
that is so cool. So are there any little ones running around that kind of sort of give you that vibe that you will be experiencing that again?
oh, well, I mean, in this business, there's always hope, right? The dream is alive, I think, every year, and that's probably the biggest reason we all stick with it. I mean, yeah, I dream big. I love saying that. But I'm guilty of loving all of my foals, like all of them, whether they have conformation issues, are, slower than molasses. I love them all. But yes, I would say that the little sister this year is something special. So we shall see what happens. But yeah,
Awesome.
she's a little firecracker. So
So, how do you handle that? I mean, how do you handle the fact you fall in love with all of them? You see them the moment they hit the ground and you bring them along. Did for those that don't go forward into racing, like, do you try to help those other ones that maybe didn't quite measure up find productive lives? What do you do?
yeah, absolutely. So a few years ago, actually, I had one that did have conformation concerns, and she'd had like a rough beginning. So I try to always be like ethical and responsible as far as like how I'm taking care of all of them. And I made the decision not to enter her in the sale, and I kept her myself. She ended up having some soundness concerns, so I didn't, like my trainer as well was incredible, and we didn't push her and pursue racing. So she's actually a broodmare right now for someone else. She's an embryo transfer recipient.
Interesting.
And so she's expecting her first foal this spring, which is pretty exciting. And I still own her. So I have the option to breed her myself in the future, or she could be a riding horse, depending on, how she's doing. And as far as other horses, I've had a few that have gone to the States, with their connections racing, and I always keep tabs. I do my best to keep tabs on them, and if they're kind of falling down the ranks, I try and get them back and find them homes, like here in Ontario, as riding horses.
Doing that must be another full-time job for you.
Yeah, it's great with social media now, though. Like we're all sort of connected, and there's so many people in this industry that are like-minded and just trying to do what's best for the horses and looking out for their best interests. So I think it's like with social media, it's great. I mean, it's a lot easier to keep tabs on horses, and people are more willing to share information that way. It's like a wonderful network of people looking out for them.
Well,
So
that's
that
awesome.
helps for sure.
Yeah, I think I would find that is one of the hardest things to do is like you fall in love with all of them and then you want to send them off and then you just
Oh my gosh. Yeah, it's hard.
Aww.
Yeah, it's definitely hard. There's tears shed in the stalls at the sale after, some of them sell. Some of them you're kind of like, it was nice knowing you, goodbye. Because they can be kind of tough sometimes, but yeah, I mean, it is hard to say goodbye.
Okay, so your stable has quite the lineage already, including 2023 King's Plate winner, Paramount Prince. So, what can you tell us about your breeding program? Has it changed much from when you first began it, to what it is now?
I would say that I'm more intentional with my matings than when I started. You know, I'm trying to create an athlete, of course. We all are, but soundness is especially important to me. And I want to see all of my foals be hardy and hearty, you know, in their racing careers. I don't think there's any sugarcoating it, but the lows are pretty tough in this business. Yeah, loss of life is like pretty gut-wrenching and you struggle to make sense of it. And yeah, injuries, illness, they're all lows too. So yeah, all of these life lessons, yeah, I think they teach you like, you know, life is unpredictable and not everything can be prevented, but yeah, sorry. Kind
No,
of went off on a tangent.
that's okay. So yeah, you talk about the highs and lows you experience that come with the territory. So what do you do to help cope with that swing, that pendulum that can take you one way or the other?
Yeah, I mean it definitely can be very challenging. I think you have to make a choice. You can either let the bad things defeat you or you can persevere. And I like from my own personal experience, something good always follows something bad. You just have to be open to the possibilities. I mean, the year that Paramount Prince was born, at that time, my best mare died after foaling. And it's obviously it's terrible. And I'm sure most of us in the business experience it at some point or another. But you just kind of have to ask yourself, you know, do you want to continue? Because this is going to continue to happen, right? It's like it's life. With life, there's death. And here I am, you know, a few years later, and I'm rewarded with the most spectacular success of my life. And yeah, it's just you've got to persevere.
Yeah,
I don't have.
I've always said, being an animal person, it's the strangest contrast to the amazing highs and then the heart-wrenching lows
Right.
of losing them. And I'm just like, why do we do this to ourselves? But it's
I
like,
know.
but then what else
I
would
know. And
we do?
it's not just like horses, of course. It's like your pet dog or your
Yep.
pet cat. Heck, for people, it's their like their hamsters. I mean, yeah, you love them all. I mean, they're part of your family.
Yep. Yeah. So can you talk a little bit about too with like the how your training, your breeding program has evolved? Like when you think back 20 years ago, what Erica thought, like either the process, I love what you said about you want your foals to be hardy and hearty. I think that's amazing. And but then the actual logistics of it. Has that changed much for you? I mean, I guess other than, evolving of the whole breeding within the sport, but what has changed?
I don't know that much really has changed, to be honest. I mean, there are a lot of programs at our disposal now. I don't use those programs. I kind of do things, I guess, the hard way. I look back at generations of pedigrees, just searching them on my phone, not using any paid programs. And I don't want to give away my secrets, so I can't tell too much. But yeah, I mean, for me, it's important to have like a stallion that, I mean, obviously, if you're going to a proven stallion, I mean, that takes a lot of the guesswork out because the stallion's already proven himself. But I like to see a horse that's already shown soundness himself in his racing career. You know, a horse like Society's Chairman, for example, very hardy and hearty horse himself. He started a little bit later. You know, it wasn't like the flash in the pan 2-year-old success story. He raced for a long time and was a very successful horse himself. So I really like that about him, and he's got incredible statistics as a stallion here.
Okay.
But yeah, I mean, it's tough. I think there's some bloodlines that, you know, people are partial to, and I'm no different. But yeah, I don't know what else I can really say without
Okay. Well,
yeah, gotta keep a few tricks up my sleeve, you know?
and I guess another old saying, you know, if it ain't broke, don't fix it. So
Right.
if what you're doing works, then just go with it.
Right.
That's awesome. Okay. So, yes, let's talk about this super awesome high of yours. Let's take a closer look at one of those. Can you walk us through what you felt like when Paramount Prince won the King's Plate?
Oh yeah. Definitely the highest high I've ever had. I still now, like all these months later, my eyes will still well up with tears if I think about it. It's like I remember things like the sound of the crowd. I mean, wow. It made my hair stand up. It was really, really exciting. And then of course, watching him, you know, my very first King's Plate contender, and watching him in the lead down the stretch, and then he won. And he beat 16 other talented horses. It was a sold out crowd. I mean, honestly, like euphoria became one of my favorite words because it was a really good word to describe the emotions that I felt that day, and still now.
Wow, that is just so cool.
It really is.
I mean, when I had the opportunity to have you on as a guest, I'm like, oh my God, yes, please, because you know, I mean, I don't know, you're like a special story. This can you share with us what this was his barn name Prince? Is his barn name Prince?
No, his barn nickname was Maverick. I had just two foals that year, and yeah, he was Maverick, and my other foal was Ace, and we were going with a Top Gun theme, and yeah, and Maverick absolutely is top.
Wow, that's amazing. So, can you describe him as a kid? Like knowing him as a youngster, does he sh has his personality changed at all? Like do you still interact with him? Where are you with him?
So he's in Florida. I don't get to see him because of my situation here at the farm. I just don't get to travel there. But I keep in touch with his owner now, and his owner's been really kind in just talking about day to day. I've been able to visit him, of course, when he was at Woodbine in training. And yeah, he was a very tough foal, a racehorse. I know I've heard little stories that he's a bit cheeky and can be, he's got a lot of personality, we'll say that.
Awesome.
But as a foal, oh my goodness, he was getting into trouble a lot. Very like I'm prepping the horses myself here, and yeah, he was naughty. He was pretty naughty.
Isn't that a sign? Isn't that a good sign that all of us horse people want in those special horses?
You know, I honestly never really thought of that before, but now that like he's changed my mind, because I'm like, yeah, now that I look back, several of the horses that I've like taken care of over the years that have like the extra personality, they have turned out to be special race horses. So I'm like, oh, there's a common denominator there.
Makes it a challenge to deal with, but it could be a good
Yeah,
common
exactly.
denominator.
Yeah.
Wow. So, yeah, is there anything else you can share with? Like, I'm just all enthralled. I mean, I've had a few experiences here and there of being in a moment where you're like, oh my gosh, and tears flowed, like, because it's so
Oh,
exciting.
it's
Like,
the best, right?
yes. Did you, like, I don't know, how long did it take you to come down from your high?
Oh yeah. I mean, it was like the best summer. And then in a sense, I guess like as fall happened and then we started to go into winter, I would say winter took me off the high. But I know, you know, spring is around the corner, and it's like spring, like hope is eternal in spring. Oh. And I'm sure I'll be like King's Plate dreaming again.
That's
I
awesome.
mean, yeah,
So what does
we can
his
always dream.
what does his future look like as far as like will he be a breeding stallion, or what do you think will be his future?
Well, unfortunately, he's been gelded,
Okay.
so there will not be any little baby princes. But yeah, as far as his future, I don't know what they have in store for him. I know he has started training in Florida, and I believe they may point him to a race in the States to get him started off this year, but I really don't know that for sure.
Okay.
So yeah, I mean, definitely crossing my fingers that he has, a successful year again this year. I mean,
Yeah.
there's a lot of potential for him. So yeah, we'll see.
Well, I'm sure you're going to be up on what he's doing.
Oh, you bet. You bet.
So, Erica, do your ethical sensibilities make it harder for you in the thoroughbred world? You've said you want to ensure you can always afford to do the right thing by all of your horses. That's a wonderful sentiment, but how do you manage to maintain a balance between doing the right thing and making the right business decision?
I would say that yes, I do sometimes make things harder on myself with decisions that I make. Financial loss is part of the business of breeding. It's never pleasant, but it is a temporary loss. And I think making an unethical decision would be far more costly in my opinion, and it's permanent, right?
Yeah.
So I pride myself on doing right by my horses and being transparent. I mean, I am selling horses. So yeah, I just want to be known for being honest. And that can be challenging from an economical standpoint, but I do like to believe that good things happen to good people and that in the end, it'll balance out. And right now I believe that more than ever.
Yeah. Wow. So, yeah, I mean, what would be the percentage of most foals that hit the ground that make it to a reasonable success on the track?
I don't know the answer to that.
Okay.
Yeah, no, I don't know. I'd be curious to know what that answer is. It's probably not very high.
Yeah. Yeah, and it's like you said, there's everybody's got the big dream and all the hopes and the wishes and stuff. But yeah, I mean, I could totally connect with what you're saying that, you hope to doing the right thing will quote unquote pay off in some way, shape, or form.
Right.
But yeah, that's got to be. So how hard is it knowing you do the right thing and you've got the horse's best interest in heart and you hear about those instances where that's not the case? What does that do to your sensibility?
Oh, I mean, it's pretty depressing, to be honest. I mean, there's obviously a lot of not so great scenarios in the whole horse industry. Like, yeah, in the horse industry. I mean, with animals, period, there are a lot of unethical decisions made. And yeah, I find that really hard. I don't know if that's like just as I'm getting older, I find it much more difficult actually to comprehend and process. Yeah. So I just strive to be better than that, much, much better.
Oh, well, it sounds like you're quite an advocate for the animal that you love, and I would sense that maybe that's going to be what keeps you in the business. What do you think?
Yeah, I would say, I think that's a fair statement, definitely.
Yeah, wanting to leave some sort of a legacy or an impact in a positive way. Yeah.
Yeah, I like that. I do.
Oh, cool. Okay, so last question here. I see that you like I said, taking your camera to the track. So tell me this, when your career is finished and you've got a picture that encapsulate it, what do you hope that picture shows?
I think that's a difficult question, to be honest. I don't know how like a single photo can summarize a lifetime, but I would just hope that I'd be smiling with my nearest and dearest.
Aw, well, how about like a well, I don't know, what is that coming across the finishing line? That it might be kind of a cool.
Well, Hey, you know what? I mean, if it's like a conduct or sorry, Kentucky Derby win photo and I'm in it as a breeder, that would be great.
There you go. Oh my goodness. Well, Erica, thank you so much for taking the time. I know you're probably in, is it not foaling season where you are right now?
Yeah, but I can't complain because I'm not the one that's up all night doing the foaling, so I get to
Well,
roll in and snap a couple photos when they're born. So I'm
aw.
pretty lucky.
But thank you so much for taking the time out of your very busy schedule and dealing with all of your little ones. And yeah, having this conversation with me, I think your story is so exciting. It's inspiring. And yeah, we can always keep cheering on Maverick. I want to see him do some more.
Thank you so much, and I really appreciate you having me on your show.
Well, thank you. You take care.
Thank you so much. You as well.
So there you have it. I have some great interviews lined up for future episodes, and we'll be covering some pretty interesting topics, as always, with the intent to open and engage the horse world on a wide variety of issues. So until next time, keep your eyes forward and continue to hit your stride. To stay current with Hitting Your Stride, subscribe on my website or wherever you download your favorite podcasts. If you like what you've heard here today, make sure you share and leave a comment to help guide future episodes and widen the audience. And be sure to check out social media to keep up to date with Equestrian Elements Life Coaching.